This is National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History, number 2. This is Betty Purr interviewing Mr. Sam Vernon on November 2nd, 1988. Mr. Vernon, I'm sorry.
Mr. Vernon, could we have your address, please?
Address?
Yes.
2211 Beachwood Boulevard.
Thank you.
Mr. Vernon, if you would you tell us something about your immediate family, your father, mother, brothers, sisters, where they were born, what they did, and so forth. All right?
I was born in Bessarabia, which was a state used to belong to Russia.
How do you spell it? Well, that's all right. That isn't
Bessarabia.
Important. That isn't important.
And then the revolution in Russia in 1917, the Romanian occupied our state, which was Bessarabia, which is on the shore of the Dniester River. The Dniester River starts in the Carpathian Mountains and flows all the way down, divides Bessarabia and Podolia gubernias, you know, states. And it falls in into the Black Sea near Odessa and Kherson gubernia, you know, this where I came from. Mm-hmm. Now, then Romania was occupied there till 1935, till the Russians came back and chased them out. Now, the Jewish situation changed when the Romanian came in, you know, and I was in school. I was going to a technical school, trade technical. There was only two schools of that kind of all of Russia. One was in us, in our hometown, in Soroki, Bessarabsky Gubernia, you know, this is what they were known. And the other one was in Kavkaz, farther out. Then it was Puryard, and I was the only Jew in the class. There were four classes, and I was the only Jewish boy. But I had a boyfriend, we were both raised on the same street, and he was a Russian, you know, and he had a tough too because we had to learn Romanian and we didn't know, you know. So I had a lot of punishment to stand and be among so many goyim, you know. So anytime I was in one end of the street and I in class and I got beaten, the only thing I remember to say, Kostya! He was my boyfriend. So when he came around and anybody laid his hand, they never touched me no more. Anyhow, I was there for 2 years, and then I couldn't keep up. First thing, it was 3 versts on the top of the hill, and we have to go through the mud in cold weather, you know. Anyhow, I give that up, and I went, I think that time I already went out of school altogether. You know, it was hard times.
No. What grade were you in? Do you remember?
I was 10, 12 years old.
12 years old. What did your father do?
My father died when I was 3 years old. Oh. And my mother, and we lived in Podolia Gubernia, you know, on the other side of the Dniester. Then my mother, at the age of 22, she took me and my sister. There were two, my sister was older. And we left and we went to our parents. Into Soroki, you know. And my grandfather was a manager of a big farm, was operated by a Jewish man, by a family by the name of Kitrosa, one of the richest family in that place. He participated in the Chovitzi, and if you know in Odessa, was organizing the Zionist movement. Mm-hmm. Bialik was there and other ones, and he was a member of that. So he left everything to my grandfather. My grandfather was running the whole show. Mm-hmm. He was 60 miles away from hometown, but he used to come, you know, for Saturday or Sunday. So, and then when the revolution came, they destroyed everything. You know, my grandfather remained without a job. And he came back home, you know, he was a big, heavy-set fellow. When he came home and he put on his overcoat, he could take in a neighbor there, this how much he lost. So, you know, we start going down, you know, it wasn't very good. It was a hard way to, you know, to exist. And then this was the period there, and then I got older. So I was interested in the Zionist movement, and I was at Sirisin, you know. So I figured I'll get prepared to go to Israel, you know. Then I went to Keshanov, which is the bigger city in Bessarabia, in to in 1923, and I put in my application to go to Israel, you know. But I didn't go as a chalutz, but I went to work in a carpenter shop to learn carpenter work, because I didn't want to go to Israel without a trade. So I learned carpenter work. I put my application there in 1923, and I didn't get no answer. At that time, our English friend occupied Israel, and they decided not to extend any immigration. So I had a visa and I couldn't go. So I had a aunt, you know, she was a pretty smart woman. And so she wrote her brother, who was in Pittsburgh, and to take me here because I got nothing to do there. So I got a visa to come to the United States. And I came here on the September the 19th, 1925. There I started all for myself, you know. My uncle was working the Westinghouse, and he lived in Braddock. It wasn't then, you know, right, you know. So I stayed with a cousin and family, you know. I stayed there about 10, 11 days, and then I went on my own. And here is something I'll always remember. Then at night, I stayed there with them for 10 days, and then I had to come for myself. So I went to 2173 Webster Avenue. And at night, one night, I decided I'll go down and see the world. I walked down there to the main street, and there were lots of immigrants came into this country, and they were talking all kind of languages, all kind of languages. I walked around there till 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and then I decided to go back home. So I went back home, where I rented a room, and I was walking in the front of the door, and I didn't recognize the place. And this was the first night. Mm-hmm. But the lucky thing was, then the man I rented from, he was a barber, and he had one of them flags, you know. So I recognized the flag, so it's called in into the, there where I started my career in Pittsburgh. And then I didn't have nothing to do. I came with a cousin and together. So he had a brother here, was a popular man in Pittsburgh. He was Dr. Weinberg was his name. He was a psychiatrist in West Penn Hospital in San Francis and Montefiore. He didn't have too much time to give me, you know, and so I had to do all those things on my own. So I walk out on the street, comes over an old man, he says to me, "Wer bist du? Who are you?" I says, "Herr Brabomitz, Lisnik, Aneneko." He says, "Na zoiten gerieven dan zeiten." So man zeiten dat gerieven, na Brabomitz, mocha duwes. So, you understand it? He says to me, "What was your grandfather's name?" I says, "His name was Abraham Lisnik." He says, "No, how did they call them?" So he corrected to me, and he says, "Look, I used to go to Cheder with your grandfather and the old country together, and I know you." He says to me, "What can you do?" I says, "I learned to be a carpenter because I wanted to go to Israel, but I couldn't get an entrance there." He says, "Come on." He takes me out from one, about a couple blocks from his house, and a man, a contractor by the name of Charlie Dunn, a Pittsburgh man, was building an apartment there. He says to him, "This is my landlord. Give him a job. He just came over. He needs a job." Mm. He says, "Well, he don't have any tools." He says, "Don't worry. He's going to have tools pretty soon." So he says, "Okay, he'll give me a job." So I walk down to a Gola Painting Glass Company, you know, and I picked up some tools and a box and everything's all right. Amounted to about $25. Then the boss, the owner, Mr. Golub, says, $25. So he says to me, "You got any money?" I says, "Yes, my uncle gave me $25. He says, "Give him $10. So the old man goes, says, "And who's going to pay the rest?" He says his grandfather paid and he'll pay too.
Oh.
In a period of years since I became a contractor, I was one of his biggest customers for Golo painting glass. We are still good friends since then. This is the way I started my career there.
That's wonderful.
And then I worked there for a month or so, and then it was winter time, and it was the fall of the year. The man didn't work for me, so I didn't have nothing to do. So I went to the Westinghouse in East Pittsburgh to work for 40 cents an hour.
Huh.
And I worked there during the winter as a laborer. But I couldn't speak English, you know. And the people worked there piecework. They used to put together models. So I looked over the way they make the models, and they used to get 60 cents, 70 cents for putting one together. I done it for them for a quarter.
Mm.
So I was there only about a month or so, and I used to make some extra money. And then the foreman comes around and he says to me, I shouldn't help him because they were jealous, you know, because I worked with Bowman. So he wouldn't let me do it. So I used to come to Pittsburgh, you know, every weekend, and I had a cousin in the back of Fifth Avenue High School by the name of Landy. So 12 o'clock at night, I used to take a streetcar to go back to East Pittsburgh at night. One night, I get in the streetcar and I see a Jewish man is sitting there reading a Hebrew book. Oh, I walk a little bit closer to him and I start talking to him in Hebrew. And his name was Mr. Smith and he was a lawyer working for the Westinghouse. So then he worked in the office and I worked as a laborer. I used to go with a wagon, you know, bringing parts. So he used to call me and he used to say, confirm with him. His son in Israel right now, as the television in Israel now, his son has, is a publisher in Israel. Then he moved to Israel and his sons grew up there. So this is the way I started over there. And then I worked there till about... Before Pesach, and the sun was shining into the very windows, I decided the Westinghouse is no good for me. I have to quit. So I quit and I came back, and I came back to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And little by little, you know, I started working with contractors for a little while. And later on, I picked up a man who used to work for a contract with me together, and I says, Benny, let's go in business together. But remember, don't run away if we don't get any jobs one after the other. So we stuck it out for 16 years together.
That's wonderful.
And we built out the contracting company.
Can I ask you a question? Could you tell me something about your brothers or sisters?
I had a sister in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And she was 3 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Hitler was traveling to Bessarabia, he killed her and her husband and her child and all my family, my grandfather and uncles and all. Only one man remained, and she just died last year at the age of 96 or 99. She was my mother's sister. And her son came for a trip from Keshinov, you know, to Israel to see his sister who lives there, to visit there. And I talked to him on the telephone. I don't even know him. You know, he was born 2 years after I was already here. So this was, I got left from the whole family.
How many were in your family altogether? You had a sister?
Just two of us, me and my sister.
Oh, just you and your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And you say your sister just passed away?
No, they were killed by Hitler.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not only this, I got engaged in Toronto. My wife was in Toronto, and I got engaged there. And I wrote her mom a letter. So I got for my mother a letter to my daughter. My sister got engaged, so I had to send her $600 for nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had $300 on the bank on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I borrowed $300 from my uncle, and I sent her $600. Then when I had to get married, I didn't have any money. Anyhow, we managed pretty good. We went through all the depression together, and we raised up pretty nice children and everything else. But as far as the family, all was destroyed during the Revolution Rush.
As far as your early years, I realize it was rough, but did you have any religious education? Did you go?
Oh, sure. Then.
How much religious education did you have?
Father, you can measure. I'll tell you, you can measure religious education, because when I was studying, Hebrew. I went to Cheder like everybody else, and the rabbi was teaching my mother before. He was our teacher. And then came a young man from a different state. And he opened up a little school, and he was teaching to learn Hebrew. Talk in Hebrew, and only Hebrew. And I stuck with him about 3-4 years, and I learned Hebrew pretty well. And I still could speak Hebrew. And then I think he quit. Then he got married, and he quit. And I finished this with them. But I went to a school, a technical school, I think I told you, there where I learned the trade, and this was after. And this is a funny thing happened. I came to Israel for a trip in 1961, I came to Israel for the first time. And I met a fellow who was from my hometown, and he was the leader of the Tzirit Zion, and you know, the young Zionists in our hometown. And we came into Jerusalem about 12 o'clock Friday. So I says to the girl, look me up, Gershon Vinitsky. She says, she can't find him. I says, I know he's here, Brandon. Then she says, there is a young man by the name Chaim Vinitsky, which is a head of the tourists in Israel. Any tourist came, somebody, he's... I says, call him up. Called him up, Chaim Vinitsky. I says, Chaim, do you know Gershon Vinitsky? He says, what do you mean I know Gershon Vinitsky? He says, he's my father. I says, look, I know you when you were 3 years old, and you know Shoma Verman. He says, oh, I don't know. I says, go and tell your father. Then Shoma Verman is here from the United States. He wants to see him. And we were in the hotel, in the King's Hotel. She went upstairs to get washed before I had a chance, you know, and they called me back. I went up and I came down. And he was sitting there, Gershon Vinitsky, and he was the leader of the Zionist group in our hometown. And he had a beard like this. I liked his beard, and I came back to the United States with a beard, and I still have it. So we had a wonderful time there, and I talked to him. Then he says to me, you know, your teacher who taught you Hebrew is in Israel. And he lives in Rehovot, one block below the Weizmann Institute, Weizmann University. Well, came back, this was on Friday. Sunday we came back to Tel Aviv, and she had a cousin, which was a leader, Zionist leader in our hometown too. And I says to him, I want to go and see my teacher. So we took a taxi, and we went from Tel Aviv to Rehovot. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And my teacher was resting, you know, so we ring the bell, he comes out, and our cousin says, do you know him? He says, no. I took off my glasses, and I said to him in Hebrew, Amir Chad Mi Atamidech. Hato Shoma. But he didn't remember my second name, because it was still Shoma. So his name was Brochman, and mine was Verma. He didn't recognize. So I met him there, and I saw him. We had the most wonderful time when we got together, you know, and I didn't see him for quite a few years. You know, I left and he left. Then he was in Belz, in Bessar Habir, and then all the people were coming, revolution went through there and destroyed him. And he ran away, and he was somewhere in Tashkent or somewhere. So in order to survive, he was acting as a preacher in some church, and he survived. And he has two children. His son-in-law in Israel is the man who brings in movies and everything, you know. And his daughter's husband. I forgot his name. Well, anyhow.
Oh, no, that's all right.
Look, I'm not a professional speaker, but I'm just telling you what I think of you. You would ask me half an hour ago, then I'm going to tell you this here, I wouldn't say. But regardless, if you want to know, I could tell you only what I know. Well, anyhow. I met him in Israel, and this was before Pesach. And we went on a first tour to Israel. So we took, He was supposed to leave Israel and go back home before Pesach, in honor to him. So I says to him, if it doesn't make sense, you go back home, you sit down at the Seder, you're going to say, Lashon HaBo B'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. Here in Adar and Ahev, he could be in Jerusalem. So we checked out. He wanted to go to Jerusalem. You know, so he came around and he spent with us the first night, my teacher with his wife. And
that's right.
So this way I got another night there.
That's wonderful.
He had a wonderful time in Israel the first day. It was fine.
When you first came to Pittsburgh, you mentioned Webster Avenue. You live in Webster Avenue. Did you live in the Hill District very long?
Yeah.
How long did you live there?
We got married and we lived in the Hill District.
Uh-huh.
I was here by myself between 5 and 6 years, all by myself. And I lived in the Hill District.
For how long?
For 5 years. Maybe 6, and then we got married, so we still lived in the Hill, but on a different section.
Uh-huh.
There were more Jews born in the Hill District than Squirrel Hill. Squirrel Hill wasn't open for Jews yet as much. There are very few Jews living in Squirrel Hill.
Then from the Hill District, then you moved to Squirrel Hill? Or where did you move?
From the Hill District, we moved here to Greenfield Avenue.
Greenfield Avenue.
905 Greenfield Avenue.
Did you live there for a
while? A year or two. And then I decided to build a home for ourselves. What year was that? Anyhow, I bought up a land and I had $600. So I paid $600 for the piece of land. And I went and I built a house for two families, you know, like. The mistake I made, I was a greenhorn and I didn't have any money and I was afraid, you know, for a big mortgage. If I would have bought a piece of land for $1,000 and built the same house, I would have gotten $5,000 more for that. But since I didn't know, so we lived there for 5 years, and we had a very nice time there. Then we moved over here. We've been here alone 4 years, right?
We're going to stop because we have to turn.
Right.
Thank you.
Where was the home you built for yourself?
Huh?
Where was the home that you built for yourself?
911 Lilac Street.
Lilac.
I sold it to a man, and my children were visiting there. So I was passing by. I said, would you give me permission to get my children in to see it? So they went in, they saw my grandchildren. I took them in there to see it. I had a friend, a painter, so he painted me doors. Such a color, they still look now, new now, beautiful. You know, he's in the home of the age. Man, you know, anyhow, I went through like a real immigrant, you know. Uh-huh. I didn't have anybody to depend on, but I built myself up a reputation. I worked it out for it.
That's interesting. I'm going to ask you about, let's see, you are a contractor, and you had built shopping centers?
I'm the pioneer among the Jewish people in the shopping center. I got one in shopping center in Butler, what I built, and you know, the one I started there was in 49.
Mm-hmm.
It was in July. In July, I built a shopping center. Then I built 3-4 more additions, and I got in partnership with Mr. A.J. Everman, the owner of the Union Real Estate Company. And I stayed with him. I'm still connected with him.
Where were your other shopping centers?
I got one in Butler, one in Connersville, one in Montreal, in Shaler.
Mm-hmm.
This is I still have. And one in the Olympia, the McKeesport, and one near the...
Did you?
And one near the airport.
Mm-hmm.
But I give them away, you know, to my children.
That's wonderful, though. That's really, really interesting that you were...
Yeah, without money, I want you to know. I didn't have 2 cents extra. I had to pay my uncle or whatever he paid for my transportation. I paid him off every cent because he couldn't afford to give it to me.
That's wonderful, though. Well, then when did you move here to this home you're in now?
1940. 1940, we moved in here. And Golda Meir came to Pittsburgh.
Oh.
And we had a meeting there, and she was supposed to go back at 12 o'clock at night. So we invited them over the house right here, and we had about 40, 50 people. And we have enough, you know, only had to stop in the bakery to buy rolls. And we were over here. And Golda wasn't around. You really got a letter from Golda.
Oh, isn't that nice? That's wonderful. All right, let me, may I ask you about when you became involved with the different organizations, such as the Labor Zionist Organization is one. About what year did you become involved?
I came here in 1925.
Uh-huh.
And a few weeks later, I got a box from the Jewish National Fund, you know. Uh-huh. And I was sent to Fifth Avenue, near Fifth Avenue High School, for donations.
Uh-huh.
And I got $13. And I lived and I lived in Center Avenue in a room on the third floor. So I had to go back to work, and I couldn't turn the money in. So I was afraid somebody should steal the money. So I put the money in a cupboard way up, and I put all the racks in the front of it to wait till I left time to bring that in. So this is the way I started my career in the Zionist movement there. Then I was a member of the Tzirut Zion here in Pittsburgh. We had a very fine crowd of young boys who came over. You know, one was the editor of a paper, you know, then he became a rabbi. Some of them became rabbis, some of them were Hebrew teachers in the small towns in order to be able to go to college. I didn't want to go to college, you know, I just went to Fifth Avenue High School and I got myself what I need. And most of them are already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a very good friend of mine. He learned to be, it was a medical school in Vienna. Ben Littlestadt. You know, then he came back here and he became a big psychiatrist in New York. And he was a Jewish writer, and his name was Jacob Glenn. And he was writing, in the Jewish papers. You know, he was a very brilliant boy. So when he was going to school here, you know, he didn't have any money. So many times he used to sleep with me on my third floor. You know, we used to share a meal with him. Then he came back and had a big practice in New York. You know. Most of them went to school, most of them. One was a lawyer, one was a rabbi, I just don't remember all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we were a bunch of Jewish people who came from Europe. We all were Zionists.
Are you still very involved with the Zionist
organization? Sure. We have a building on Murray Avenue across from the Maxim. Be on it, and I'm the treasurer of the COC, of the Pearl of Zion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. That's interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The Hebrew free loan, you're interested in that organization, too?
I'm 43 years on the board there.
43 years.
I had a friend, and he says to me one time, he says, I want you to be on the board.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to be aboard on the Hebrew Free Loan. And I just started my first shopping center, and I used to be 7:30 in Butler, you know, in the morning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something new. We were the first ones to build a big thing. I says, I can't do this. He says, no excuse. We need you there. I says, okay. So I came around there to represent myself. So they tell me I can't get in for another year. Why? Because one father was one from the organization is moving to California. He wants his son in. The man is the owner of the Washington Realty. At this moment, I forgot his name. So I says, all right. I came around. They told me you have to wait another year because he has to go in first. So I got in a year. I've been already there 43 years. Okay. If anybody ever done any good for me, was the man whose name was Sam Kelly, who put me in the Hebrew Free Loan.
Mm-hmm.
There, I felt wonderful. I got so many things to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
This is best I enjoyed in social life there, and I'm still there.
What year was the Heber Free Loan started.
In another year, it's going to be 100 years old.
Oh, is that old?
In the Sunday Federation, and we meet in the Federation every Tuesday night. This is, if you want to write something about Jewish life, get in touch with somebody from the Hebrew Free Loan. And they got statistics and everything. This is a monument.
Mm-hmm.
Three people put, each one put in $3.
Mm-hmm.
And they organized the Hebrew Free Loan to borrow people money because the immigrants were coming. They were up against it and used to borrow to them.
Mm-hmm.
I am the one who changed their, used to borrow the biggest up to $300.
Mm-hmm.
Now if you want to hear something locally. No, Rabbi Posner from the yeshiva?
No.
Well, why don't you know him? He's a very good man. He's 84 years old. I mean, he's a poor man. Rabbi Posner comes around one evening. It was already dark, and he says to me, you know, he says, I know that, you know, I wasn't a religious Jew, and I wasn't participate with rabbis, you know, because we had other things to do. You know. He says, I know that you're not, but we bought a building. We got a building on Fifth Avenue, but the yeshiva is on Fifth Avenue, it's a yeshiva. He says, we got this. Governor Lawrence made it, and, you know, they got it, and we are repaired it. And we are stuck. We need $5,000 to finish it, and we don't have it. I said, I'm sorry, I can't give you no $5,000. Couldn't help it. The best thing I could do for you, I could give you $100. I went and I gave him $100. So he